One of the more influential sounds that came out of Texas in the mid-60s was the Sir Douglas Quintet. It featured Doug Somm on vocals and Augie Myers on organ. Their Tex-Mex sound reflected the musical diversity of San Antonio, R&B, country, blues, and Mexican rhythms. The Sir Douglas Quintet had the hits Mendocino and She's About a Mover. Somm spent a lot of time in Europe and Canada in the 80s. Now he's living in Austin and has his first U.S. release in 7 years. It's called Jukebox Music. Here's I Won't Cry.
Darling, I found out a long time ago. Found someone else, you don't need me anymore. But I'll keep on loving you just the same.
Chose the songs for the new record?
A lot of those are regional hits that were never out of Texas and Louisiana, like Crazy Baby, Your Mind Tonight. There's a regional border sound here. We call a Southern Louisiana West Side sound of San Antonio. It bore on the triplets, and a lot of them were just regional hits.
Now, I'm used to hearing you with an organist, Augie Meyer or Flaco Jimenez. How come you did this record without an organ?
Well, this was, that's one thing I realized that I do that most people don't. They do one style, and I don't do one style. I do the Tex-Mex thing. I've had the Sir Douglas Quintet with the organ sound. This record was really meant to be meant to sound rhythm and blues. We really went at it with that. If it would have been my own production, I probably would have mixed it up more, but in a way, it's kind of good because I kept a focus.
Is that you on this record playing all the triplets on the piano?
How did you know? Yeah, we had a working title for this album called Triplets for a Dying World, Because, you don't hear that anymore. It's a real dominant thing during the Fats Domino era. Everything had that ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding, had that, triplet thing. And for some reason, with all these modern records, you listen to all the Fine Young Cannibals and all these records that are out now, none of them have triplets.
Do you remember when you first picked up that sound?
When I first heard it, it really got into my brain, was in 53 or 4, which made me 12 years old. I had a friend down the street from where I was raised in San Antonio was really into, see then rhythm and blues before his R&B and went into rock and roll, was called race music. And a lot of it had that real good piano work, and Fats had a lot of hits before, Blueberry Hill and Ain't That a Shame. And I just really liked it. And I'd go into the gym, had a real good piano at Sam Houston High School where I went to school in San Antonio. Had a piano, and I'd go in there and play do that stuff. And finally, there's some kind of way I play that rhythm that a lot of guys don't do anymore.
Now, I've read that your mother didn't want you to listen to black music in your house, didn't want you to play black records.
Well, I think the white people, like you see it through Buddy Holly's movies, and, there was a thing. I think the white people realized that the kids were getting into this real black sound, and it was something really scared them, like when Elvis came out and shook his hips and, with the Clovers doing, One Mint Julep, there was a real frightening air about what this would do to the teenagers, and I happened to be a teenager at that point.
So what music was it okay to listen to in your house?
Well, they were into country. See, growing up there was great because we had country, we had blues. I was raised near a blues club. It was across a field. About a mile, I could walk over there and hear T-Bone Walker. Late at night, I'd sneak out of the house and run across over there, and I'd watch T-Bone. Had a little crack in the wind. It's almost like in that Jerry Lee Lewis movie where him and Swagger are little kids, and they sneak across the river. You know that part?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of like that, and we kind of peep through the window. And we really got the blues into my soul. I could go dig that one night. And then Hank Williams and Bob Wills were all playing around there. So, people always ask me how I got such cross-culture of music. But I think that's it. I think at a young age, it was really born into me. San Antonio was very, very, very beautiful to grow up in at that point.
So when you were a teenager, did you hang out listening to music in black neighborhoods and Mexican neighborhoods in San Antonio?
Oh, absolutely. That was the groove. We would, my school bordered on, it was really interesting. My school, Sam Houston Junior High, and went on to be high school, is now Jeff Davis Junior High. It had a little thing where you went down this road behind it, And once you crossed over, we call it Salal Creek. It's really Salado, but in Chicano slang, we call it the Salal. And when you cross over to it is where all the black places used to be. So we'd go over there, you know, and get a bottle of wine and sneak in there and play them nickel jukeboxes. And it was really a trip because it was a whole strip of nothing but rhythm and blues clubs. I'd have been about 13 or 14. By the time I was 15, I was working all those places.
In the early days of the Sir Douglas Quintet, you passed yourselves off as a British invasion band. Whose idea was that, and what was the logic behind it?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It was a scam that worked. I don't know if you're old enough, but people watched Hullabaloo. Trini Lopez, it says, now we'll announce where these guys are really from. It was a big deal because we had, like, really pulled off this number. And, you know, Huey P. Moe, like I call him, the P.T. Barnum of the South, he really pulled a number. And the whole bit really, really worked. We had these long, very regal coats, and, you know, it worked real well.
So whose idea was it to do that, to pass yourselves off as a British invasion band?
Well, me and Huey had the idea, but we didn't really try. It just kind of came out that way. We just kind of set the wheels in motion. And, you know, it really became a phenomenon when we hit England in 65. I just met Brian Jones. Bob Dylan introduced me to Brian Jones. We become good friends, and we were doing a Ready, Steady, Go. I mean, we really caused a phenomenon. Sir Douglas Quintet, when we hit with a hit record in 65, when Pete Townsend was an opening band. That's far out, huh?
Yeah.
Pete Townsend and Jerry Garcia were in opening bands for us in the mid-60s.
That's great. Your 1965 hit, She's About a Mover, was that supposed to sound like a British invasion hit? Did you think of it as sounding that way?
Well, the organ was popular at that point with the Zombies. We really liked the Zombies, and we really liked the Animals, you know, that was Alan Price.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a funkier sound. Like, when that record first broke, I remember Dylan had told me, I think, which sums it up. Everybody was trying to tell Dylan that we were English. He said, no, man, they're not English cats. Listen to that beat and that groove. It's got to be in the southern part of the States. So that's what really worked into breaking that whole Texas thing because, you know, eventually we know that people really know we were from Texas. And, you know, we're Texans and we're proud of it, you know.
But you were the walking down the street, looking fine as she could be.
Did you try to put on a British accent?
Oh, we did a few. Pip, man, lovely day. But you got to remember there are three Spanish guys in the band, three Chicanos.
Right.
And every now and then my drummer would break character and go, hey, ¿qué pasó, vato? ¿Qué pasó? What's going on? ¿Cómo está? And all that. And we'd go, hey, man, cool it. And one time in Port Arthur, these two little girls heard that and go, they're not English, man, they're Mexicans. We kind of slipped, but it was fun, you know. Made us a very different bilingual band, you know.
When you recorded The Rains Came in 1966,
yeah.
What phase was the band in then?
Well, that was a strange thing. We had a hit in 65, and then everything really hit rock bottom about December that year. My father died. Everybody in the band went through a lot of personal problems. See, at that point, hippies couldn't live in Texas too well. It was a very redneck trip going on. I mean, if people were hassling it because you just wanted to be like the San Francisco people. So the ones that could, like me and Janis Joplin, Johnny Winter, we all left and we went out to California. And we called Huey one day, so I'm going to release The Rains Came. Rains Came, even though it was a big hit for me, I never personally liked it. So we told Huey, hey, man, we're not even going to play that record. He said, well, I'll make you a deal, man. If it gets in the charts, you're going to play it then if it's going to do good? And I said, well, maybe. So we called him one day from Indiana, and the thing had really charted real big, like, into the 40s, and then we moved to California, and we didn't have a whole lot going. We were just learning about the music business and collecting royalties and whatever, and Bob Dylan had told me what BMI was, so we had moved out there with the family. We had got our first check, and we just started to kind of, you know, we went to L.A. one day, and we saw William Morris Agency, and me and Johnny Perez, a drummer, said, hey, don't those guys book gigs? So we walked in and said, hey, we're the Sir Douglas Quintet, just walked in off the streets, and they checked it, said, wow, these guys got a 35 with a bullet record, so can you put us to work? And it really is ironic because now, you know, people have to call agents and managers and go through all that. But that's how that happened. Then that happened about a year later after the second follow-up to Mover kind of stiffed and we came back with that. We seem to have a pretty good comeback power.
I'm really surprised you don't like The Rains Came. I think it's a really good record.
Oh, people love it. But, I mean, you know, when you make as many records as we do, and I'm sure the Beatles and the Stones, they have their favorites.
Right.
And then there's ones that the people like that they don't like. I mean, there's ones that people love that they don't love. But it does get a reaction when I go, rain, rain. It just, that organ comes in and all that, they just go crazy.
Rain, 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 rain. Tears keep coming down. I haven't seen my baby. Let this down. Rain, 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 rain. My pillow's soaking wet. Broke my heart. Caused me so much pain. Rain, 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 rain.
So you had moved away from Texas for a while because you didn't think it was a very good place for
a
hippie to be.
It wasn't very conducive. I went to Frisco.
Yeah, but well, now you're living in Texas again.
But not for long.
You're moving?
I'm gone again.
Oh, how come?
Well, I tell you, man, I'm a Bay Area fanatic. I mean, I love the Oakland A's. I love the Giants. I love Boskaggs has the greatest club in the country there right now. I just really gel. It's funny. I'm a Texan, but I get along better in a lot of ways in New York, Chicago, L.A., Frisco than I do here. I love it here, but right now it's not, I can't explain it. It isn't really a turn on to me like it was. It's a big kind of little thing turning around now. It's kind of becoming, oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's just age or what, but the South is the South again, and it's kind of like I just like being in the Bay Area. Number one, I'm cooler out there. I like that high of 65 every day instead of 105, you know. But Texas will always be, you know, I'm always here. I got my grandson will be 5 years old next week, you know. And so, I mean, I have heavy ties. I'll always come to Texas, but I really have a strong, very strong ties with the Bay Area.
Well, listen, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Adios.